It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. We're going to get Paul's take on the Apple event, a look ahead to the next Xbox. We'll talk about Microsoft Office, Skype for Business, Teams. And yes, here comes the Fall Creators Update any minute now. It's all next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 535, recorded Wednesday, September 13th, 2017. You should have named him Cuphead. Windows Weekly is brought to you by WordPress. Your customers want to find you, so build a WordPress.com website and help them connect with your business. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/Windows. And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Check out this week's menu and get 3 meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to BlueApron.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we get together with Paul and Mary Jo, and they show me how to use Windows every week. Every week, folks.
Today we were showing you how to use OneNote on Linux.
OneNote.
Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com, Mary Jo Foley, allaboutmicrosoft.com, two of the best, most engaging, most knowledgeable observers of the Microsoft scene.
And I'm not sure we would describe ourselves that way, but
I would. No, sure. That's my job. I am your paid shill. Your unpaid shill. So, Apple, I don't know if you saw this announced.
I saw it. Leo, I made a career out of making fun of it.
Did you tweet the whole time in your
oh my God, yes.
snarky fashion? I forgot to watch your tweets. Darn it.
Man.
Was it good?
I thought it was. But then maybe I'm not my worst critic.
So.
I was sitting across from him while he was
doing you were? Where, you were at Rattle and Hum.
We were.
You were watching the event at Rattle and Hum.
I wasn't watching the event because whenever it's an Apple event, I just go to Rattle and Hum so I don't have to watch the Apple event.
Oh, yep. Clever.
This time she had to deal with the doofus across from her.
But it's true that, I mean, is it true that you guys don't really need to pay attention to what Apple does?
No.
Because they're a mover.
I don't know Mary Jo so much, but I feel like I really need to pay attention to what Apple does. Just like I feel like I need to pay attention to what Google does. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mary Jo, if you're covering enterprise, Apple isn't really a big player in the enterprise space.
You know, because they've got the alliance with IBM, and I'm like, you know, I keep an eye on them. I don't want to totally neglect them, but I want to neglect them as much as possible.
Is that just jealousy?
No, I just don't like Apple products and fans, to be honest.
Yeah. I think it's a hatred thing, not so much jealousy.
It's more of a hatred than a jealousy thing. But I do need to keep an eye out, especially, you know, well, we're going to talk about this in our first item. These days, it's not a bad thing to be a Microsoft user with an iPhone.
So, it should be.
It should be, but it's not.
No, that's true.
Well, and then there's some bright sides because there's a massive Bluetooth security flaw. They call it the born tooth. And Microsoft was very happy to say it does not affect Windows Phone.
Yikes. Well,
finally.
Nothing else does either, Leo. So.
Finally, a reason not to be in mobile.
Other things that don't affect Windows Phone? The world's most popular apps.
Instagram does not affect Windows Phone. So I do like your one of my favorite tweets. Which is, I can't wait for next year's perfectly named iPhone XS. Well tweeted, my friend. Well tweeted.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm holding during the entire event, and I'm holding the Note 8 because it came weirdly. It came during the event, and I'm looking at what Apple's proposing with the iPhone X. And I'm thinking, well, I have had wireless charging. I'm glad Apple did Qi, though. That's good because it means that standard, which has been around for a while, will now really be, you know, accessory makers love Apple. So they know that that's going to, they'll be able to see Qi everywhere. Bars will now have Qi embedded in the bar.
Yeah, planes will probably have them on airline trays. Yeah. I mean, they'll be everywhere. It's great. Yeah,
and I know that's a little frustrating to non-Apple users that, so we had it for years, but Apple finally gave it its seal of approval, and now everybody's doing it. And I understand the frustration there.
I feel like to be fair to Apple, you know, the one thing that people who are critics of the company need to understand is that Apple doing this is good for everybody. And it does formalize things in a way that other companies can't.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And they do. By the way, you know, one of the big questions about this product, the iPhone 10.
By the way, that's one thing bad about the name is that at least half the time people are going to call it the 10X.
I know. And I actually know what it's called, and I keep saying X for some reason. I like the X because they just got rid of it on the Mac. So that was smart.
Yeah. I know, it's so weird. I thought it couldn't be. The rumor was that they were going to do that, and I thought, no, they're trying to trap somebody with a bogus.
I know. It's true. They're a strange company.
They are a strange company.
You know, Apple tends to get things right. So even though they're often late, in fact, usually you would say maybe late, but by the time they do get to something, they do it well. Yes. So for example, Mary Jo and I were talking about how wireless charging for a long time, at least on the Nokia stuff, didn't really work very well, you know, even though they had it for years. The facial recognition stuff has never really worked very well. And if Apple can actually get that stuff right, that is an advance of its own kind, right? I mean, because that stuff, you know, anyone who uses one of these phones, like the one you have now, you know, you're like, come on, seriously, log me in.
The face recognition is terrible. You know, it does have iris recognition, which is a little bit better, but it's, you know. And Windows Hello, I mean, if I put on my glasses, won't recognize me, nor will the Note 8.
So I find that stuff to be frustrating.
But Apple did it at great cost. Apple had to put in three additional sensors at the top. They had to put a dot projector, an infrared camera, and an infrared light source into the top of the phone just for Face ID.
I know. And why? Like when Windows Phone had this, it never worked. And once I get the fingerprint sensor on the Android phone,
fast.
Well, by the way, here's a prediction.
It's so much better.
it's pretty clear that Apple was working on doing Touch ID in the screen, and they weren't able to get it working for this version. Right. So iPhone 11 or 12 or whatever they call these things, I suspect they will
Samsung
add that eventually back.
It's rumored was doing the same thing for the Note 8.
And Microsoft.
Yeah. They ended up putting it on. Actually, that's the only negative I could find on the Note 8 is this crap positioning.
Well, so I'd say two negatives to that phone. One is the position of that reader, especially on that phone, because it's so much taller. There would have been room. There was room on the S8, but it should be below the camera. I think that's a more natural finger position. But the other one is just
other phones do it, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. I want that phone that you're holding, but I want it with pure Android, and I want Google Assistant on it, not Bixby.
You want this phone. This is the essential phone. Fingerprint reader on the back, as it should be.
Yes.
Bezel-less
Except for one
design.
Thing. My only issue with that one is apparently Android. The camera is not as good as Samsung.
They'll fix that.
So if that's the thing. So
it also has a notch, by the way. Not as bad a notch, but it has a notch.
A notch.
You know.
Oh, at the top. That's right. Yes,
it does.
Yep.
And of course, Apple's is really wide at the top.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Apple did a pretty decent job with putting their notification stuff on either side of it.
I guess.
And those guys do the same, so that's fine.
Yeah, but what's going to happen, and we actually saw this in the Apple event, there was a game that part of it was cut off by the notch.
Right.
And
they're going to have to resize those to make them fit.
Yeah, or movies. Yeah. I mean, but then it's like, well, why'd you even bother if the screen doesn't go all the way to the end anyway?
Yep.
What's the point?
What's the point?
Yeah.
We don't know how well Face ID will work. So we're taking that on
Apple's
assertion.
This is the open question.
That it's going to work perfectly and beautifully. But I think your point is really well taken, Mary Jo. Why replace the fingerprint reader?
It's I don't
fast,
know why.
It's effective. It's secure. It works.
It worked. Like when I used to shut off face recognition on my Windows phone. I'm like, nope, it almost never works. And you're like bobbing around with it. And then when I get the fingerprint, I'm like, this is what I wanted, right? I don't know.
I think they really do want the entire front of it to be a screen, you know? And the sheer size of that fingerprint reader just makes that impossible. You know, I'm looking at my iPhone 7 Plus, and it looks like Frankenstein. It's got this giant chin, giant forehead. And it just looks old-fashioned. you know, yeah, compared to these modern phones, like especially the Samsung devices.
Now, what about the price? I mean, here they are. They're pushing $1,000. Samsung's Note 8 starts at $930 to $960, so it's pretty close to $1,000.
I'm okay with it. I have bigger concerns about the other phones where they raised those prices by $50 without even mentioning it.
And they raised the price of the iPad without mentioning it, too.
They did that, too. So that stuff's a little tough. I think they have enough iPhones now where they have a range, and that phone can be seen as aspirational. And I think we've already had that discussion around this notion that, you know, $1,000-ish for a phone that you're going to pay for over 2 years is like $40-something dollars a month. A lot of people are going to be very happy to do that. I think this phone's going to sell way better.
Okay.
In fact, I think the big problem for them is the other iPhones. I think the iPhone 8 is not going to sell well at all. It's too much like the previous version, and I think it's going to be bland to most people, especially now that they have this other thing they can look at. The only issue is going to be if they can make enough of them, you know, quickly.
I also felt like there are too many SKUs now. They are making an SE, a 6S, a 7, a 7 Plus, an 8, an 8 Plus, and an iPhone 10.
I know.
You're saying this to people who cover Windows, though. Plagued by
but this
too
was
many.
But they have Steve for was famous for coming. Steve was famous for coming back to Apple and cutting all of those lines and saying, no, it's got to be simple. He said the most important thing you can do is say no. I feel like no one's saying no at this point.
Well, I guess maybe by the time these phones are on sale, the 6 goes away. I'm not really sure. I mean, it seems odd that they would keep two previous gens around. So they have an iPhone SE, which is a small device. They could have the previous gen 7. But of course, now there's two new devices as well. It's a lot of stuff.
I just feel like consumers might be a little confused, particularly between the 8 and the 10. I mean, like,
Not to mention the fact
that the user interface is completely different on the two phones.
And compared to like an iPad, which also has a slightly different UI as well.
Some of their phones have headphone jacks, some of them don't. Some of their phones have Touch ID, some of them don't.
They did this transition, right? Remember, they transitioned to Lightning, and some of them were still on the old wider, I can't remember what it was called.
30 pin,
The older connector, you know.
I'm puzzled, and I think if I'm puzzled that end users will be. But Apple has an amazing resilience and an ability to sell products no matter what.
Yeah, they do.
So I'm not going to count them out by any means. But neither of you are. You use an iPhone, don't you, Paul? You use an iPhone.
Yeah, I do. But, you know, for the past year, I've struggled with it because the iPhone 7 Plus, for the first time in many years, was the first time I've gotten an iPhone where the camera wasn't as good as its predecessor. And more alarmingly, it's not as good as any of the Android phones that I've been using. So going back to the Nexus 6P, which I think is what Mary Jo still has.
It is.
Pixel, the Samsung S8 that I had briefly. The OnePlus, I mean, these devices all have better cameras than this thing. And that's, for me, is a big deal. And so I've found myself in a weird position especially the past year, where I've gone away on a trip. And I get Google Fi internationally, which is incredible. But I also want to use that phone because the camera is so much better. I take all these night shots wherever I am that are just unbelievable and impossible to do with the iPhone. I don't know. There's just been a number of things. You know, in our space, the Microsoft stuff is always going to be better on Android because it can be, right? Because they're locked out of the Apple ecosystem. There's stuff coming in Windows 10 specifically, which I want to spend a bunch of time with, which is always going to be better on Android. There's just no doubt about it. In fact, I got a little notification dialog when my wife texted me while she was out at a store. It comes up on my Windows computer. Like, that kind of stuff is really neat. And on the other side of the equation, you know, Google has made Android a lot better over the past two or three releases as well. I would say especially NNO, where if you get a clean version of Android on there, it's actually really nice and it works well and it looks good and it's all the things that Android wasn't, you know, not that many years ago. I sort of feel like Android is inevitable. I know in the United States especially, maybe in Western Europe too, the iPhone will always have this big market share, but I just feel like there's no stopping Android, that you know, it's almost like I've been waiting for it to be good enough for a long time, you know, and I feel like now it finally is as good as it needs to be.
Well, and then, of course, Google's going to have its event in a couple of weeks in early October.
Yeah, so. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, and I, you know, we'll see what they do with a bezel-less design phone. Their camera's already superior. I would like a bigger screen. I like these kind of tall form factors like you see in the Samsung devices. I think that's really neat. We'll see. You know, maybe that becomes my next phone. The nice thing about the Apple thing, by the way, is I'm not buying an iPhone 8. That's a ridiculous upgrade. I would never do that. The iPhone 10, I keep wanting to call it 10X for some reason, by the way. But anyway, the iPhone 10, we can't even pre-order that thing until the end of October. Yeah. Well, that's beautiful. It's something I don't have to think about it. I can just wait and see what Google does.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't even think of that. Yeah. By then, you'll have seen everything, October 27th.
Well, people will review it, right? And that's the thing. We need to know whether the facial recognition is good enough. I also want people who have phones like the one you have, where the edge, the screen actually does go to the edge and beyond because it curves, to see whether this Apple thing, which is not actually edgeless, by the way, is okay. Because, you know, like I said, the older iPhones to me, even in the existing Pixel as well, they look old-fashioned now because of these Samsung-type devices. And I'm not actually 100% sure the iPhone 10 meets that mark. You know, it's like a half step to that.
You know what's funny? It's maybe even a little ironic. Basically, Apple built in a little Kinect in that notch. Yeah. Well, right?
You know, it's not ironic, right? Because they actually hired guys.
They bought that.
Kinect.
No, they bought the company. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They bought the Israeli company that made the Kinect sensors.
Yep. So it's like a Kinect Mini.
It's a little mini Kinect in there. Now, how do you feel about the notch, huh? Now we're talking.
That explains why the notch is so big.
Yeah.
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry that Microsoft doesn't have a dog in this hunt. In a way, they decided to have a foot in both camps.
They did.
Yeah.
At Build, that was kind of like the surprise message, right? They said, our new message around mobile is, as long as you've got a Windows PC, we basically are acknowledging that you probably have an iOS or an Android device. And we want to make your experience better through connecting you with Windows 10 on a PC. So it was kind of like the final day when they gave their blessing to the fact that Windows Phone was going nowhere. And they kind of said, okay, we know you've got iOS and Android.
It happened 2 to 3 years after that reality had occurred out in the world. But yes.
It did. Yeah. Sure. Yep. But yeah. So now, you know, Microsoft will never say Windows Phone is dead. I don't think they'll ever actually say those words.
It just hurts too much.
No, yeah. We talked about this. I actually think there are legal implications to that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Once you step out as an executive of Microsoft and declare something like that, you probably open the company up to lawsuits from customers who had bought them in mass or whatever.
That's a good point. Yep.
I think.
Like the NYPD?
Too soon.
They'll enjoy their iPhones. They'll be fine.
It's not dead, but it took an arrow to the knee, somebody in the chat.
Yeah.
Microsoft faces the same problem here. I mean, you know, making your phone better because of Windows 10 or making Windows 10 better because of your phone is not necessarily a winning strategy either. And, you know, you have to kind of wonder, and I keep saying the same thing over and over again, but I really feel like Windows users, by and large, are not really super engaged, you know, that not like mobile users are, because it's not a super personal device. For a lot of people, this is where they go to do work, and it's just as unwelcome as any job site. You know, you just, you kind of get through it and you leave, and you don't want to deal with it at night. And, you're not sitting there looking at an app store and trying to find out how to do new stuff with this thing you hate so much. So it's a tough thing for them. And it's not just mobile. It goes to all these things like digital assistants and all the other stuff they want to do. They're in kind of a tough spot. And so, I mean, good for Microsoft. They're acknowledging reality, I guess.
But, although,
I don't know.
The one thing I think they will do, although I don't know exactly when they'll do this, they're going to have to say at some point what their strategy is for mobile devices moving forward, because we're now going to Redstone 4, and we're pretty sure there is not going to be Redstone 4 test builds for phones, right? we think Redstone 3 was the end of Windows Mobile as a platform. I mean, even what you're going to get in the fall as your creators update release is not the same thing that you're getting on the PC. It's not Redstone 3. It's this thing called Feature Release 2, which is kind of a dead end.
Well, I mean, for short term, they could release more of those, right? I mean, there's no reason over the next 6 or 9 months they could release more feature releases or whatever.
They could, but that's not what I think they're going to do.
Yeah.
I think they're going to, at some point, get up on a stage somewhere, whether it's at, you know, the launch event for Creators Update or if it's at Ignite. I don't know where this would be or where it would make sense, but I think they're going to get up there and say, you know what? There's this platform we're building for mobile moving forward, and it's not Windows Mobile. It's a new platform that is going to be based on a common core across all devices, and we're going to kind of start over. And the question is, what kind of devices will run this thing, right? So I think this is what Andromeda is. We've talked about Andromeda being a device, which Microsoft is making, which I think is the case. But I think there's also this Andromeda software piece too. And I think Windows Central has heard this as well. But it's the future of the mobile OS platform for Microsoft. And my question is it different from Redstone 4? Or is it just some kind of a new variant of Redstone 4 for devices that don't exist yet? I don't know exactly what it is. I think they have a strategy.
I've literally heard it's a device.
And I've heard it's a device and a software platform, both.
Yeah, well, I mean, right. So I guess the question is, thinking this through, you know, where might they announce this? So if Microsoft comes and has a Surface event, if it's in October or the spring or next October or whatever, and one of the things they announce is this Andromeda thing, but it has a name, whatever it might be, Surface something, Surface Mobile, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. The question at that point, though, is this just them and they're going to have a Surface device that's kind of, you know, a mobile device, obviously doesn't quite run Windows. They already have one. Windows 10S isn't quite Windows.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or is this a platform that OEMs can adopt as well and make their own versions of it? Thing is, you know, when you get into this kind of hybrid device, curious what the market is. You know, we haven't seen a big market of third-party Windows 10S devices. So what would be the market for a mobile device from Microsoft that's even less compatible than Windows 10S? I don't know. I really don't know. I'm not actually saying there is no market for it, but I feel like at some point you have to just kind of acknowledge that, I don't mean you, but Microsoft, this doesn't make any sense.
Right. I mean, I think they've got to say something, right? Like, I think that there has to be either some closure or they have to say there is a future here and here's how we think this is going to pan out. And maybe for them, mobile means tablet only and it doesn't mean phone at all. I don't know. We keep saying we don't know because we actually don't know, but I think they are going to have to say something about what is the future of mobile, because they're going to come up to the end of this thing with Redstone 3. Here's feature release 2, guys, for your phones. And only some of these phones are going to get it, not all of them. Yeah. And then what happens to you after that?
Yep. You get an iPhone. Just like
You get an iPhone or an Android phone.
All right. I mean, I don't know. I have a hard time imagining the point of this. I also, you know, we've often discussed this notion that there's no reason that Microsoft can't add the phone stack to Windows proper. It's kind of curious that they haven't. And when you think about Windows 10 on ARM, you get that possibility. It makes even more sense on a device that gets really good battery life and so forth. I don't know. I just think people are pretty happy with the phones they have. You know,
right?
You thinking about a Note 8, maybe?
Me?
Yeah.
So Note 8 is definitely on the short list. I want to see what Google does first, because, like I said, you know,
it'd be foolish to buy something now. Yeah.
I think that the fingerprint reader thing, if that was the difference between us and normal people, Leo, is that we use different devices all the time. So these things will trip us up. But if you just use that one phone for 2 years, you would get really used to where that thing was.
You know how it works.
So I think I think it would be okay.
The next Samsung's already said, and I don't know if they'll do it, but I'd love it.
Yeah.
That they're basically, the next Note is going to be like a courier, but it's going to be a single screen, curved screen that opens like a folio.
Yep.
Sure.
That would be that would finally break the mold, right?
Yeah, and Samsung's the company to do it because they already have these platform pieces in place, including that, I don't remember what they call it, but their continuum feature.
Right.
What's it called?
DeX.
DeX, yes. So, they're kind of working toward this. I also get the feeling from, not this is unrelated to anything, but I get this vibe from Samsung that they're trying to get rid of Google, right? That if next year Samsung announces Samsung Maps, you might start thinking that Android might be going away from those things.
Maybe, because it got ties in. On the other hand, remember they had Samsung Milk, which was a music platform, which they dumped. Yeah,
that's true.
So, Samsung's conflicted. That's the for sure thing.
Sure.
It's a love-hate relationship.
Yeah, it was like Russia and the United States in World War II. They weren't really friends, but we're going to work together for now.
So I have reinstalled Windows 10S.
Awesome.
Following your prescription.
Okay.
And I just wanted you to know that it's as if I had wiped the drive.
I guess that was the other alternative.
I thought Chrome would be there. It is not.
So let me ask you this then. That background you have, is that your background?
Yeah, it took a while to load that, but that's my...
Okay, but it did sink. So it's sunk, as we say.
In fact, Edge will have my bookmarks, I'm sure, and all that stuff. So,
okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. They figured out how to do this much more quickly than was possible in the past, for sure.
Yeah. Because I don't see Office here either. Remember, I checked, didn't I? I had Office.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. I do see Office.
Well, but that's not... Those are the store Office things. Like, you'll probably go to the store. Yeah. Yeah. You'll have to install it first.
Yes, it goes to the store. You're right. So it's basically an image that wipes your drive.
Okay. I see. I didn't think it was that nuclear.
I didn't either. I wish it had some data on here, because then I could say for sure. But I really didn't have anything on here, I don't think. Let me see. No. Wait a minute. My downloads are intact.
Interesting.
So I did have
that data. That makes sense. I mean, so that is your personal data, right? They didn't screw with that.
No. Nope.
But they've always been able to do this. Remember, if you did a reset, you could save your data and settings.
It's like they wiped the programs folders and all that. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. No, but that makes sense. Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. So it had to be one or the other, and now we know.
If you revert to 10S, expect all your apps to be wiped out. Just for the safe
yeah.
side.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they weren't going to work anyway, right? Actually, the other thing you can try if you feel experimental.
Sure.
Is
I always feel experimental.
Go into settings.
Okay.
And go to the last one, which is called what? Update and security.
Mm-hmm.
And then go to restore. Why is mine not working?
I'm actually.
Oh, recovery. Sorry.
Okay.
And see if you have an option to go back to your previous Windows version.
Oh, wouldn't that be interesting, huh?
I think that you will, although this process is a little different from other.
Yes, go back to the previous version of Windows.
So I'm curious, if you were to do that, if it would pull...
Would it restore Office and
I'm
Chrome?
Thinking that it might.
Should I do it?
I think it might.
Just for...
Yeah, why not?
Wow. This is really... This is one inception.
Mm-hmm.
Inception of an inception. I'll have to plug it in.
Well, there's a Windows old folder on your computer that has that stuff in it. So
they probably just stuck it there, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I have a feeling it's it will in fact bring back your applications. But I was wrong in the last one, so
it's unpredictable. That's what's great about Microsoft.
That's why they need a book. That's why someone's got to write a book.
Oh, why are you going back?
Right, because I don't like you, Windows 10S. Write that, please.
Or maybe I'll just say Therat, then they'll really know it's you. Therat told me to.
Yes, rightfully. Yeah, I add my name
check
to it.
For updates before you go back. Oh, they want me to install the latest updates. I'm not going to. Should I really do this? It seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, I would.
All right.
You don't want to use Windows 10S.
Yes, I do.
Oh, Leo.
Paul, let him do it.
No, wait a minute. It says.
Quiet devil on the other shoulder.
Yeah, there really is. You will have to reinstall some apps and programs. You lose anything.
Oh, well, okay. See, that does suggest. But you know what? That language is from Windows. I mean, I don't think that's new to what you're doing.
Right. This, by the way, is why Paul is such a nut job. He does stuff like this for fun.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I spend weekends doing just exactly what you're doing.
Well, let me
right
see
now.
What happens now.
Yeah.
What happens if I do that?
And then after like a weekend of work, I have like one sentence I can put into a book where I know for a fact that this is correct.
But you need to, but somebody has to do that. That's what's great. I'm glad you do. So we know.
I told you this. The guy who got me into writing told me, he said, he goes, "What?" We were actually writing the Delphi 3 Super Bible. And he kind of pulled back from on his chair a little bit and he said, "What kind of people write stuff like this?" I'm like, what do you mean? And he goes, "How broken do we have to be as people to want to write this?" You know,
all the screenshots, all the tests. Yeah.
Like what's wrong in your DNA or whatever that, you know, makes you want to see this through to completion?
It's pretty impressive. We're glad. We're just glad that you do. That's all I can say. We're glad.
Glad someone does it and we don't have to.
Someday we'll live in a world where people like Paul don't have to sacrifice themselves to the good, the greater good.
Well, I thank Microsoft for my wonderful career. It's all good.
Let's take a little break, talk about WordPress. We'll get back to Mary Jo Foley, Paul Thurrott, and the latest news from Microsoft. Our sponsor today is the number one platform in the world for websites. 28% of all the websites in the world run on WordPress. For years, I've been a WordPress fanatic. I ran my own hosted WordPress install for a long time, starting the early 2000s. And then I flirted. I admit I consorted with another, but I'm back home. Only this time I'm doing it better. I'm not running my own server. I'm doing it at WordPress.com. First of all, it's cheaper than it was running my own server. Second, they keep it up to date. They keep it secure. I don't have to worry about it. Third, I just have the joy, the pleasure of having a great WordPress website without all that work. And I'm a member of a big community at WordPress.com. That follow button is fantastic. It adds new followers every single day. And you know, if you get to the front page with a column or an article, you're going to get all these new readers, plus, of course, the great support, the 24/7 fabulous support, not just from the community, but from WordPress itself and the smartest engineers out there. Look, if you don't have a website for your business, you are missing the boat. Google your business. See what shows up. If your Yelp score is the first thing people see, that is not good for you. Oh, I have a Twitter, Leo, or a Facebook. That's not it either. You need to have a site that you control, that's your site. That's the site when, if you've got a restaurant, if you're a graphics designer. Now, I know the reason you might not have a site is because you don't want to, but you just, I don't want to become a web expert. That's why WordPress.com is perfect for you. That's easy to use. You go there, you get started. The templates make it gorgeous without any work on your part. You don't need to have to hire an expert or anything like that. Although there are plenty of experts in the WordPress platform if you want to. 28% of all the websites in the world run on WordPress for a very good reason. Mine does, leolaporte.com. But also big sites like quartz.com. That's running WordPress. Go to wordpress.com/windows and try it today. Create your website, find the plan that's right for you, and you will save 15% off your brand new website if you go to wordpress.com/windows. We thank WordPress for the support of Windows Weekly. And these two right here, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, and an occasional visit by Brad Sams.
like a gopher.
He had to sneak in there.
He's part of the family now. You know, we feed him. You know, that's what happens. You feed him once, and they just keep coming
back.
Can't get rid of him. Cannot get rid of him. Windows 10, another day, another insider build. By the way, I was looking at this Windows 10S on a Surface laptop. Mm-hmm. 1703 still.
Yep.
Is that surprising?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yep.
No. Not surprising. Right.
Okay, but we are progressing with Redstone, what is it?
Three. Yep.
Wow.
Oh, speaking of which.
You going to check to see? Go ahead, install it during
the show. This build, a lot of people haven't been able to get it. This is kind of a weird error message at Windows Update. Actually, I'm on a different computer, but I had this problem.
Somebody was telling me HPs. I don't know if you had this happened to you. Mary Jo, but the update, yesterday's update screwed up a bunch of APs or HPs.
Oh, no.
Is that true?
Okay. I haven't installed that one yet, so.
Go ahead, do it right now. That's what we're all doing.
Yeah, let's see how it goes.
We're all doing it.
Yeah, the preview build they dropped last night, 16288, which is a Redstone 3 fast ring test build. That's the one Paul's talking about that a lot of people couldn't get it, and then they had to do some fixes on their end at Microsoft to try to get it ready to go out. And They're saying some people are still having some issues getting it now.
Yeah. Supposedly it's fixed. I guess it takes a couple hours.
Oh, it is fixed now. Okay.
Yeah, to get out.
All fixes, no features as expected, right?
But
as we're getting closer. It is not RTM, people. But the watermark is gone. Yeah. Right. The watermark is gone, but they made a point of saying it's not the final build or it's not done yet.
I'm going to take credit for that. I've been talking about that for a while.
I think you should.
The watermark means we've reached the end.
It's not the end. There will still be more.
No, of course there'll be more. There's always more. We don't live in a world in which there are never more builds. There's nothing.
Right.
You know, how do you even describe software that's never final? You know, you can never say the final build of Windows 10, but no.
You can't. No. I call it RTM still, or it's done, right? But it's not done yet, they say. Yeah, nothing that significant in that build. And then just before the show, they released another Redstone 4 test build, skip ahead build. Nothing too huge in that one either, right?
No, there's a couple of new things though, and none of them stick out in my head at all.
The improved boot experience, right, is in this one. Some Windows shell improvements, some Narrator improvements, mostly fixes also though in this Redstone 4 build. So you're not yet seeing any of the brand new big features, nor would you expect to yet, right?
But it's always interesting what is in there, right? And so people like Raphael can kind of look at these builds because there's stuff waiting in the wings. You know, they don't want to unleash too much stuff now, but sometimes some of that stuff has to be in there just to support other parts of the operating system. So there could be some stuff hidden in it.
Yeah, so if you're just to reiterate, if you didn't get on Skip Ahead, if you missed out, you will be getting Redstone 4 builds once Redstone 3 is done. Then everybody will be getting them. So you're not really missing anything right now. I mean, there's fixes and minor updates, but you're not missing out on any big new features. And you probably won't, because usually it takes several weeks, if not a month plus or two, for them to start putting new features in a new test build. So no one panic.
But there is a new feature coming.
There is.
To Redstone 3. And that's that privacy thing they just announced.
That's right. Yes.
Talk about shoveling it through the door at the last second, you know.
I know. Right. So this morning, Microsoft said, we are going to make some more privacy tweaks to the Fall Creators Update, building on the privacy changes we made in the Spring Creators Update. There's nothing here that really stood out to me. I mean, they're going to let you get more easily to the section that's applicable to a change with a learn about page, right? So if you want to know more about a specific
topic. Just the way you said that made it sound like the most convoluted, terrible thing. I think it's just about user education that
it is.
When this thing pops up in settings, because you're going to see it whether you have a new computer upgrade or whatever. You know, if you want to learn more, I think this is the deal. I think a lot of privacy stuff has to do with transparency. In other words, give people the information they need to understand whether or not they want to enable this thing.
Right.
So that's a big thing. But actually, I will say there is a semi-major change coming to Windows with regards to privacy, and it has to do with the apps.
Yeah.
And they're doing in Windows 10 what mobile platform makers are already doing in, say, Android or iOS, which is when an app needs permission to do more, you know, things. I mean, some things, not just location, but other things, access your calendar, access your contacts, whatever it might be. It's going to have to pop up a dialogue where you expressly say yes or no to that request.
And then it says you can change your setting later, right?
Yeah. So, and I have to say, this happens to me a lot actually, but this is one of those things I never thought about. But once they present it as a thing, you say, why wasn't that already there?
You know? I know. I thought it was. So when I was reading this today, I was like, oh, that isn't there already? It seems like it. Of course it is, right? But no. Yep. So it will be. But only this is how it will work. And once you install Fall Creators Update, any new apps you install after that will have this pop-up come up. But any apps you already had installed, you have to go in manually to settings and privacy and make those changes yourself.
I think otherwise it would be a disaster.
It would be
dialogue boxes. I also am curious whether legacy apps, you know, desktop applications will fire these notifications. I would imagine they do not.
Didn't they say store apps only?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Because it is really a mobile app kind of a feature, a mobile platform feature.
Yes. Then if you're a business user, they also are tweaking one setting around Windows Analytics. So they're saying we will be limiting the diagnostic data to, quote, the minimum required for Windows Analytics. And that they'll be making that tweak inside of the Fall Creators update also.
By the way, so the minimum required is what's called internally at Microsoft a fire hose.
And, right.
It's a
they
lot
didn't really elaborate.
No, they're not really saying what that is. Yeah.
No, they did not. But yeah. So yeah, and Paul asks in the notes, why are they continuing to tweak these privacy settings? Because people still think they're collecting too much information, and it's still a problem for Windows 10, right? Yep. It is.
I don't actually think that they're doing too much. Like, I actually don't think they're collecting too much information. This goes back a couple of years almost, really, when you think about it, and all of the kind of anti-privacy stuff that kicked in as soon as Windows 10 came out the door. The problem has always been exactly what they're finally addressing right now, which is the communication stuff. Microsoft never did an effective job of explaining what data they were collecting and why. And I feel like in most cases, when they do explain that, people, or any reasonable person, would look at that and say, oh, yeah, okay, actually, that's fine. You know, to most of it. I think we get a little freaky about privacy and, you know, for good reasons. I mean, obviously, sometimes, but I just feel like this has been overblown, and maybe this time they'll. It's weird in a way that most of the fixes here are just documentation style fixes, and that's kind of what they needed to do all along. You know,
true, right?
I think.
Yeah, anyway, I think the more transparency, the better. I still, and you probably do too. Every time there's a new test build or anything, there's always someone on Twitter who's like, "Yeah. Well, you know, I'm never going to install Windows 10 because they're just spying on me." And it's like they can't shake that.
I know.
It's not just
consumers.
Thanks for
chiming in, by the way.
Not just consumers are saying.
I'm also never going to install Linux because it's distributed on floppy disks, and I just don't like that.
Yeah.
I hate those floppies.
Yeah.
I'm always like, okay, sorry. Yeah. You know, but, you know, watchdog agencies, too, they're trying to stay one step ahead of privacy regulators who keep coming at them for Windows 10.
It's in light of the most recent news about the Equifax breach and the fact that there are four companies that are gathering every bit of information they can about us and not keeping it particularly secure and selling it to anybody who wants it. The fact that we're so upset about Google, Facebook, and Microsoft is really amazing, you know? Now, on the other hand, I mean, we want them to be private. And after all, Windows, you know, didn't gather anything about you for years, right? I mean, even telemetry is fairly new, I think.
Well, they've always had that CEIP program, the customer experience, something. I don't remember the exact thing. This is an evolution of that. I mean, there's no doubt that they collect more information now, right? They don't collect more information so they can learn about you, the user. They collect more information so they can learn how to make Windows better. This is literally, I know it's, I don't mean like they're God and this is altruistic, but seriously, they're not trying to harm you as an individual.
Yeah.
They really aren't. Like, it's crazy to think that. It's.
They're not reselling
that information. It's literally about making Windows better.
They're not using it to pick ads or anything like that. It's.
No,
it's not for that.
No, they're actually less offensive on the ad part than Google.
Yeah, right. They're less offensive, period, than Google. I mean, yes.
Hey, you're switching to Android, buddy.
I know. Listen, I have trouble sleeping at night. Right? Don't worry about it. Nobody's happy.
Look up
this.
Cognitive dissonance. You see.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Look up hypocrite.
I mean, but. I don't mean that to say that to diminish people's privacy concerns. Everybody's got the right to know.
No, I don't either. There are legitimate privacy concerns.
If you're not comfortable with it, don't do it. I mean, there are people who won't use Ubuntu because Ubuntu was routing queries through Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they don't use Google. They use, you know, Dogpile or DuckDuckGo. And, You know, I mean, so if that's how you feel about it, I understand, you know.
No, crazy people are people too.
Even paranoids have enemies. So I can't get, you're saying that I can't get the fall creators update on my Surface laptop?
No, you can.
But not, well, it's not showing.
Not the final version, because it's not finalized yet. You have
to join
the
insider. Not final.
No.
That's right. Oh, I thought it. Why did I think it was? It's not. It's later.
Because every week we keep talking about how it's basically done, but
I know,
a month and a half later, it's still basically done.
Okay. No, and because it's called 1709, you would think it would be out in September,
it's
but
it's
going to
be October. Right. All right.
I think it will be finalized in September.
Me too. Yep.
I'm just starting to catch
up. That will explain it.
You know, I have to listen to last week's episode. I think I missed something.
Me too.
Microsoft getting ready to start servicing Windows 10 on ARM.
Finally, ARM. Right?
I'm really impressed. I have to say, the one of the things about the new iPhones that's very impressive is what Apple has done with its processor. And it started with ARM, but I think Apple's really... I doubt there's much ARM code in the A11 anymore. But ARM is a great... there's no reason you couldn't use ARM nowadays to run a supercomputer or a desktop computer or anything, right?
I think, honestly, aside from the fact that there are things outside of hardware that are going to have, you know, well, AI, I guess you could say ARM impacts that too, but these, you know, cloud services, et cetera, on the client,
a lot of servers
actual
are
devices
running
that
ARM
people use.
Of the power profile.
Yeah.
But I think the most disruptive thing that's going to happen on client is not so much a particular platform like iOS versus Android or whatever. It's literally going to be these mobile ARM style platforms usurping the traditional desktop. I think this is the biggest tidal wave for the client since the internet.
What's driving that? What is it?
Mobile.
It's mobile. And
you can
low power
in your pocket and use it all day long, and the battery life is great. Yeah. You know, comparatively speaking. You know, we all complain about battery life on mobile devices, but you know, how long ago was it when you got a laptop from Dell or whoever, and you brought it out on the road, and it lasted 3.5 hours, and then
most phones go a day. I mean, most laptops still don't go a day.
Right. Yeah.
So I think it's that kind of thing. I also think there's this, you know, for all the weird stuff around like BYOD and blah, 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 all this stuff, these enterprise issues. Mm-hmm. I think one of the bigger transitions, the story no one really talks about is just when it comes to mobile, people have discovered they don't need this other stuff by and large. You know, I don't mean literally everybody, but I mean, most people don't need to sit down with a huge keyboard and a mouse and a big screen and type long things all day long or crunch numbers on a giant spreadsheet or, you know, edit graphics on a giant screen or whatever it is they're doing. Most people just don't need to do that stuff. And for, you know, it's kind of like a benefit to your life in general. You have this job you hate, you go every day and they give you a phone now instead of a stupid computer and it makes your life just a little bit more bearable, you know? And I think these things all play into it's just a more personal kind of experience. And so there's no clamshell computer coming that's as personal as an iPhone. I get that. But the benefits we see on those devices impact the PC. And I think we've gone as far as we can kind of go on the traditional PC platform with regards to mobility and kind of seamless natural computing. And I think the next step is going to be dropping that stuff like a bad habit.
We've talked about how Windows 10 on ARM is just Windows 10, right? It's not like a separate thing. Right. But the reason it's in the notes now is in one of the latest test builds, some of the ARM builds started showing up, like Windows Edition for Cloud ARM 64. You know, what I wonder about is how Microsoft is going to kind of introduce this, right? So they're trying to make the point that it's just Windows 10, but then there are going to be these new always-on connected devices from HP and others coming out before the end of the year. So are they going to have like a big launch thing for this? How are they going to play this up? And the other thing we still haven't heard much about really is the emulation piece on ARM that's supposed to let you run Win32 apps on ARM.
Yeah, we have to see this in real life and see how it works.
We haven't yet.
But you know
when are we going to see this?
When are we going to see it?
Yeah. Like, is this going to be an Ignite thing?
Right? Will it be this fall? You know? I don't know. Yeah. I mean, that I'm not 100% sure. But honestly, Windows 10 on ARM plays exactly into this thing I was just talking about exactly. Because it is, you can't just go hard stop and change. You know, PCs don't just disappear. But PCs can make a transition. And this is how you make this transition, right? You can change the underlying platform. You can have a device where you open it up and I'm like, oh, look at that. It actually came on right away. Mm-hmm. Oh, look at that. It actually gets 15 hours of battery life. Yeah, maybe it runs Microsoft Office a little bit slow. You know, maybe that's how it works. Mm-hmm. For most people, that's not going to matter a lot, you know? And I think that's how we get from here to there, you know, that if you look at whatever the size of the PC industry, whatever the percentages of people are on like traditional desktops, traditional laptops, that stuff's going to shrink. And then the stuff, the size of the markets that's these new hybrid kind of ARM-based devices is going to grow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether the overall size is bigger or smaller, it's probably going to be smaller. But this is how we transition.
Yeah.
And I just think that, you know, everyone needs a phone. Some small segment of the population might want a tablet, and some segment of the population is going to need a PC or a PC-like device. Yep. It could be like Dex. It could be like a Chromebook. It's just something where you get a big screen and a keyboard and a mouse or a pointer, whatever kind of pointer. You know? But you don't need it all day long, most people. Not all people, but most people.
People are pointing out, of course, desktop computing is very different than mobile computing because you, your screen is on all the time and all that stuff, too. But
yeah.
Still, but, I feel like
desktop
ARM can
computing
do
is a much smaller size market than mobile computing.
Yeah.
I think you look, if you use a Mac or a PC, unless you change the default settings, you know what this is like. They have to get really aggressive on these devices with power management to give you any kind of battery life at all. And this is a slight exaggeration, but you could be sitting there typing at the computer, the phone rings, you answer the phones, oh, wrong number, and you come back and it's asleep. You know, like the screens go off really fast. And it's because those things are super inefficient, you know. It's also because they're trying to emulate. Well, you know, how do they do it on the mobile devices? How do we make a device that can seamlessly transition between these states? How do we make a device that lasts all day on a battery? You know, there's all these little tricks you can do. But I think there's only so far you can go with these Intel-style processes. They're really kind of old-fashioned still.
Although there are going to be Intel-based, always-connected PCs. As part of this, right? So that's going to be really interesting, right? To see how those stack up against the ARM always connected PCs. I mean, both of them are going to use eSIMs, right? And have LTE connectivity, we think.
No, of course. But the issue is going to be the Intel ones will provide better performance, no doubt about it, especially with non-emulated apps.
Yeah.
They will have gaming capabilities and high-end capabilities that will not really be possible or viable on an ARM system in the beginning, at least. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't matter to most people. It just doesn't. Yeah. It's not going to matter.
Yeah.
That's the problem for Intel. The strengths that they can point to, just like the strengths that Microsoft can point to for a PC versus another kind of device, do not matter to most people. Mm-hmm. That's the issue. That's why we're having this transition.
Yeah.
It's not the go-to device anymore. You know, not for most people. Listen. There was an iPhone event yesterday. I don't know if you noticed. It was in the news a little bit.
Was there?
There will never be news like that for any PC, anything, anytime, ever. So, you know, that's what happens. It's a different level of interest and awareness.
Mm-hmm. Times are a-changing.
They are.
Yeah. Yep.
And Microsoft's still trying to get its story remix fixed.
So I pulled up my notes. I wanted to set the record straight on this because I get a lot of pushback from people on this one.
No, really?
Mary Jo, you might want to get you going.
Back
in May, we all headed out to, where did we go? Seattle? Where was built? Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle.
And Microsoft did something they hadn't done before at Build. They did it actually last year at Ignite, but before each of the day's keynotes, they brought the press into a room and they said, here's what we're going to talk about. I actually thought that was a great idea. It gave us prep time, you know, that we weren't going to be surprised by something and then scramble to try to write something up. It was nice. They got a little cute on the day two one because when they brought up the story remix thing, they actually never told us the name of the app. In fact, they said, we're going to leave that as a surprise. But I want to be very clear about this because a lot of people have disagreed with my contention that Microsoft said this was going to be a new app that – this thing was always supposed to be part of the Photos app. In fact, Microsoft at one point this year tried to rename the Photos app to Story Remix. Mm-hmm. I take really good notes. The word app appears 5 times in my description of Story Remix as I wrote it. Now, granted, I did write it. You know, this is me transcribing what people said. But when Frank Shaw stood up and said, here's what we're going to talk about in day two, he went through the list of the things. He says, we're going to talk about Windows 10 and Momentum. We're going to talk about a new app. Joe B's going to be, it says next click deeper in RS3 is how I wrote it in my notes. Windows Store making Windows Home for all devices. Alex, high energy to finish. That's what my notes say. The woman who talked about this app, Lorraine Bardeen, according to my notes, said the first announcement of the day is going to be a new app for creators. It's a first-party app, meaning a Microsoft app. It lights up the spirit of what we're trying to do in the Fall Creators Update. This is a dev conference, so we're trying to show other devs what they can do with the Fall Creators Update. It's a super cool app.
Wait, people, who's saying this isn't an app?
I get this from all kinds of blogger types who are like, no, Microsoft has always said this was going to be part of the thing. I'm like, guys, I am not making this up. Literally,
but
new
I mean,
app for creators. You were in the room.
They thought it was part of the OS instead of an app?
So in other words, they showed it at Build and it looked like a new app.
Yeah.
And then they put features of this thing into Photos and everyone was like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe this is not going to be a new app. Maybe it's just going to be part of Photos.
Oh.
And then people like, Paul, you said it was going to be a new app. I'm like, no, I didn't say it was going to be a new app. I just reported what Microsoft said. But you were there.
Yeah.
Right?
They called it an app. No, it was an app.
Well, I know they did. It's in my notes.
So now that's why I was like, names. Wait, what?
I've given the names of the people who said it. It's in my notes.
Yeah.
They always said this was going to be a new app. Anyway, guess what, Leo? It's not going to be a new app.
It's a web app.
It's going to be part of the Photos app.
Oh.
But it's still an app because it's part of the Photos app, right?
It's not a new app, and they described it as a new first-party app for creators.
Oh.
It's a feature, not an app.
There you go.
Mm.
It's a dessert.
I think they just cannot decide if they want to rename Photos Story Remix, which would be horrible. And I think this is where this confusion is coming from, and I bet that's why they didn't even want to tell us the name at Build.
Sounds logical. Because Photos is the right name.
But who would call this story remix? Guys,
So in other words, right, if we're going to start renaming apps for features, like we're going to call Edge Chrome Installer?
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, we don't, these names don't make sense. It is perhaps a side effect of my 20-year history with Microsoft that the day I made fun of this was not my lowest interaction that I ever had with these people, but it was one of the bad ones. Like I got in arguments with people from Microsoft on Twitter. I endlessly mocked every stupid name I could think of. This is just a dumb idea in a long list of dumb ideas. But as of today, the plan is it's crazy. I don't have to explain why it's crazy. It's crazy. But we're going to try to rename this app. They are going to add these features. So what do these features mean? They're going to add photo slideshow capabilities. They're going to add the ability to take photos and short videos and combine them into a movie. Obviously, there's going to be transitions and all that kind of stuff. But they're also adding 3D and augmented reality features to it. And so you can take 3D objects like a poop emoji, put it into your video or slideshow or whatever, and it sits there and it kind of looks like it's in the scene. And maybe it's even going to have some of those cool AR effects they showed off at Build. I mean, we'll see. Right. They're not letting people test it unless you're in skip ahead. You can't access this version of the app. But supposedly, and I don't know why they said this, but Neowen said it will arrive on the day that the Fall Creators Update arrives as a downloadable app install. Mm-hmm. And okay. I mean, I guess what that means is by the time everyone switches over to RS4, maybe at that point we will finally get access to this version of the app and we'll have a week or two where we can test it before it ships publicly. But as of today, I've not seen it in person myself. I just know that people have accessed it. There you go. So I just wanted to be clear about this because every time I mention it was supposed to be, every time I get people who push back on this, every time. And
but we have the video. We have video of her saying it was an app, right?
Oh, I don't know what they said on stage. This is my note. This is the meeting they had with the press where they describe what they were going to say.
Let's see.
To help them be successful.
Story
Remix, working together with Remix 3D, provides all three of those. You can use Story Remix to relive your community. And today, I am delighted to share with you how we're further extending creativity by transforming the photos and videos experience in Windows with Story Remix, which includes a brand new video creator. We believe that to be truly creative, people need inspiration, and they need materials to work with.
So there, it's ambiguous. Seem to say, she's transforming they're transforming the app.
Yeah.
And I think that's why people pick this up. My point is, we talked to Microsoft, and by the way, this was not two or three people in a room. This was 200 people. I mean, there's a lot of people in this room. And I highlighted the word app in my notes. It's app. Like it appears over and over again. They were very clear that it was an app. I thought.
You know what? It doesn't
matter. Anyway, it doesn't matter. My only point is I just want people to understand. I don't really actually care how they deliver this thing. I do care that they don't rename the Photos app. I think that would be
something. That would be a mistake.
That would be
the point
horrible.
Is I don't make up things like this. Like I don't there's no reason for me to say this if it didn't happen. Amazing to me how often I've been called on it, and I don't quite understand what the pushback is.
I feel like anything they're doing right now that is around mixed reality, 3D, augmented reality, the wording they're using and all this stuff is very much in flux, right? And some of the things they've shown us a year ago still don't even exist, right? So I think they're just kind of wanting to be inspirational, but they need to be clear.
By the way, they
got to
say that's what they're doing because this
that's
is
what
problem.
They need to say, right? They could say we don't know when we're going to deliver this, but here's our ultimate thinking right now.
The creators update. There's a video that describes what Microsoft's going to put in it that Microsoft made. None of those features are in the creators update. They're still on the web. Like they never removed it.
Yeah.
For the fall creators update, we had Build this year. Story Remix was not the only thing like this at that event.
No.
Joe Belfiore got on Twitter later and said, "We never promised that this stuff was coming in the fall creators update. Yeah. We said it would come sometime in the future." So I went back and I watched the video. Guess what?
I know.
He says
you
that it's coming in the fall creators update multiple times. You got to be careful with that kind of stuff.
You do.
It's okay to slip. I mean, it's okay to.
Yeah.
But you gotta A, be honest and B, be clear.
Right.
If this stuff is coming at some point in the future, it could be the next version of Windows, it could be the one after that. That's cool. Just say that.
Yeah. Right.
That's all you gotta do.
Yep.
It's interesting because in at least this respect, they're kind of the opposite of Apple. Apple says nothing.
Well, but that's changed, right? Here's three examples from just this past year. This is the first time Apple, to my knowledge, has ever done this kind of thing. We're not shipping a wireless charging pad for the iPhone, but if we did, maybe it would look like this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed up. They showed an aisle. Like, what is this? We might ship it some. We don't know. We're releasing this phone with this capability. I guess there are third parties that have chargers. We don't know. We're not going to sell them. We don't have them. But if you want to get one, you can get one. Maybe someday we'll ship this thing. They pre-announced the HomePod 6 months before it came out.
Yeah, that's true.
They pre-announced the iMac Pro.
Yeah.
They came out when people were I don't remember people corrected. Complaining about the Mac Pro, but apparently everyone was. So much so that they had to make a public apology about it.
Right.
Did they have something to replace it with? No, but we're thinking about what we're going to do there. We'll have something. I mean, you're right about Apple historically for sure, but it's interesting to me that the way the world has changed, even Apple has been forced in some ways, I don't force, but even Apple has kind of just started talking like,
what are the pressures that cause a company to do that? Is it a
market
paranoia?
Forces, I mean,
fear that the other guy might do it first?
Freezing the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, this is classic Microsoft from the 90s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Microsoft, mm-hmm. We're going to do pen computing. Don't worry about Go. Those guys, they're dead. Don't worry about it. We'll do pen computing.
Yeah.
It did eventually, but it was like 7 years later.
Yeah, that's really So it maybe is a testament to how competitive it is, and really, frankly, despite the big differences, how similar all these products really are.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't like 20 years ago where you really had something. Different companies had significant differentiation.
Oh, Leo, I mean, remember the original iPhone introduction? I don't remember the exact quote, but you remember it was something like this. He said, "This thing has got all these advanced technologies, and we've patented the hell out of it."
Patented the hell out of it.
Guess what? Virtually every patent that they have for that thing that's been gone to court has been thrown down because they did not invent multi-touch.
Right.
They did not swipe to unlock. They did not invent. Like you can go on and on and on. Like all that stuff he was so proud of. Like we're going to have this, and no one else is going to be able to take it. The pinch to zoom stuff.
Right.
That Google didn't have in Maps for like one version and then added to Android right after that.
It's
not like it used to be. Like that stuff disappears like immediately. HoloLens, how exciting was that? They're doing it on a phone.
Apple, I wonder if Microsoft feels like they dodged a bullet. We thought that yesterday would be an augmented reality show.
I know. Yeah, I was thinking
really
that
was
too.
Not.
Yep. Right.
I don't know what else
you can
say. Does
Microsoft feel good about that or bad about that?
Right. First of all, augmented reality, mixed reality, I think from a consumer scenario is not going to be a big market anytime soon. Right. I do think this is one of those areas where Apple's going to get it right. Like I said, you know, Apple comes in late and they kind of show up and they do it right. That we were talking earlier about how this phone is bristling with sensors and whatnot. They're going to do a good job with this.
They're pointing the wrong way, though.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a big deal.
In other words, Tango, Google's solution, has many of those sensors that are pointing at you that allow you to do a talking poop emoji pointing the other way.
No, they don't. No, no. But you know, but by the way,
no, I mean, but I'm saying that's rid of- we all thought that the Apple would have infrared cameras, infrared depth sensing, project the dots, all of that stuff. Yeah, they had it, but it's facing you. It's not where it needs to be to do augmented reality. Their augmented reality is not particularly more sophisticated than you can do it on an existing iPhone. It isn't.
That's probably true. No, that's probably
true.
I'm
just
trying to think through it.
Tango is way ahead of it hardware-wise.
Yeah. Well, but Tango requires special phones.
But nobody has it. Right. At least Apple will be releasing a phone that does something. But
yeah, and if you look at like Google announced a few weeks back or a month ago, whatever it was, their replacement for Tango, right, which is more of a general Android initiative to get AR.
It's an adjunct. I mean, AR Core is basically
their version of AR Kit. Yeah, because they can't live up to it. And so if you look at like if AR Kit does five or six things, whatever those things are, I'm not really that into AR. Google's version, whose name I now forget, does three or four of them, right? It doesn't do all of them. It's not as powerful. If you have a Tango device, which nobody does, yes, that does more because it has special sensors and so forth. But I think the goal long term on both platforms is going to be to get that stuff, you know, into the platform, into the hardware.
It's, you know, they just, Apple did not, they just showed one AR demo of a game that wasn't particularly compelling.
No, it really wasn't.
And that was that.
That's another thing they do poorly. For all, you know, everyone's so proud of Apple. It's great presentations they do. It's like 35 minutes into it, they finally show the first product.
Yeah.
And they do like, you know, we love this thing so much. We made a little video about it. You know, it's like 17-minute video about, like, whatever. Yeah, the AR thing was crazy because that's a great example of let's beat to death one thing. Instead of showing you, here's five awesome AR things, we're going to show you one AR thing so long you're going to think it's boring by the time it's over.
There are better demos on YouTube, on Twitter.
Yeah, it's really, I find that to be bewildering. But by the way, Steve Jobs used to do this all the time. Remember, he used to sit down at the computer and be like, here, let me show you every single photo in the new iPhone, or every feature in the new iPhone. He'd be like, oh, no. Like, you know, it's like, you know, like 37 minutes later, you're like, oh, and here's a blur effect. Like, oh, jeez, like, you're still doing this, you know? Yeah. He was the master presenter, but he had some pretty terrible moments.
Yeah. Speaking of terrible moments, Skype time. Skype for Business features migrate to Teams. Teams is this has been a week for Teams, hasn't it?
It has.
A lot of Teams news.
Yep.
I'm actually fascinated with Teams because it's a business product and I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's fascinating to me. Seriously, I think you'll appreciate this.
That was irony.
Sure usage, I can't really say. Mm-hmm. No, but Microsoft adds features to Office 365 all the time. They generate about 15 seconds of interest, and then we move on. And there are 117 features in Office 365. God knows what any of them are. This thing has stuck, right? Yeah. In ways that even, I would say, Skype for Business never did. I know there are more people actually using Skype for Business, but there's something about this. I see a level of interest in Teams that I have not seen in a new Microsoft Office product of any kind. And I really have to really think about this. I don't know how far back to go. Bigger than like Sway, obviously. I know it's a consumer product, but I don't know what to compare it to. It seems like it genuinely is popular.
Well, I think it feels that way because Slack is popular, right? And this is a head-to-head competitor with Slack. So people who are younger, this is a preferred way to communicate. So I think it's definitely got legs.
Yeah,
but
I think so too.
It wasn't a good week for Teams because Microsoft accidentally showed their hand before Ignite about what they're going to do with Skype for Business and Teams. So one morning early this week, a bunch of people log into their Office 365 accounts and they suddenly see this message that says, Skype for Business is now Microsoft Teams! ! And that wasn't announced. It just was an ad that was showing up in their client. Then Microsoft actually went so far as to post to the Office 365 admin portal a whole thing saying, get ready for your upgrade to Microsoft Teams. Here's how this is going to work. That wasn't supposed to happen this week. None of that was supposed to happen. And Microsoft won't talk anymore about what exactly this means. And is it all of Skype for Business that's being migrated to Teams? Is it some? Is it only the instant messaging and presence parts? What about the telephony stuff, you know, that now you can do with like Cloud PBX in Skype for Business? How's that going to be added to Teams if it is? So there are a ton of unanswered questions that we will probably not hear about until Ignite at this point. But now we kind of know where they're going with this.
Do we? Well, okay. I feel like Skype as a brand has never taken off in business.
In business. Because Microsoft, it was Link. Right.
And then it was Communicator before that. And, you know, sure.
Yeah.
But that's okay. Yeah. I think people just have a bad, you know, connection with
feeling.
Skype. There's something about it. Something terrible. You know, like the Damien the Omen or you know, Chucky the Killer Doll, whatever. This is a bad connotation there. But I could almost wrap my head around this notion that they're going to get rid of the Skype brand. I mean, obviously it's going to be the same technology. They've integrated Skype all over Office, all over Office 365. It's everywhere. You can jumpstart Skype calls from do it from the calendar app in Windows 10 for crying out loud. Like it's everywhere. It's like a tick. But the technology has to survive, but it kind of makes me think that like Teams, again, like I said, like for whatever reason seems to have really taken off, you could kind of see the Teams brand subsume Skype on the business side.
Yeah.
And that would be...
This is more than just the brand.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was just the branding, but then when you see the message in the admin portal, it's actually migrating people off of Skype for Business to Teams. Like it's an actual, like it's not just we're changing the name. It's also we're going to get you off of Skype for Business. So
I don't think
the
many
question
people
is,
would complain about that.
I know. And, you know, Skype for Business, I hear tons and tons of complaints, including at my own company about how terrible Skype for Business is. And I think some people are like, yeah, okay, it's going to be disruptive, but it doesn't really work very well. So let's try Teams. The question
also,
again, yes.
Well, you brought this up. I mean, when the new Skype client launched on mobile, and yes, we're going to bring it to Windows, you were the one who said, well, okay, but what about Skype for Windows? And I believe you heard the sound of a dial tone, or a cricket or something. It was just like, we don't know what we're doing there yet.
In fact,
I think this was why. Right?
Yeah, I asked them. I said, are you going to just make Skype for Business Teams? And they're like, we're not talking about this. So I'm like, okay, great. That was like months ago.
That kind of sounds like a yes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But what about all the parts of Skype for Business that aren't really in Teams right now, like PSTN conferencing and broadcast meetings, like really big broadcast meetings, Cloud PBX? There's a lot of pretty advanced telephony functionality that's also in Skype for Business. That can that move to Teams? Like, what would that look like?
Well, right? Because we did this transition before. Remember when Microsoft was moving everything to Office 365, the very features you just mentioned were only available in the on-prem version of what used to be Office Communication Server or Link Server, whatever it was called. I don't know if they ever had a Skype for Business server. I guess maybe they probably did. I don't remember. But those capabilities required, you know, on-prem hardware. Eventually it became cloud-based. And so, honestly, once you're in the cloud like this, I think this transition becomes a little bit easier. And in that case, what you might see is literally a rebranding. I mean, you just take the Skype infrastructure you're using and you keep using it. You just don't call it that anymore.
I don't know if Slack has that, but I know that HipChat's replacing their chat kind of Slack competitor with something that has telephony and video. And because apparently that's what you want. You want to be able to have all your team communications inside this blob.
Slack is like the Google model. You know, it's like you're a young startup and you want to have whatever it is you want to have. And you don't have to integrate with Office phone systems. You guys are all working remotely anyway. And so your communications methods are going to be smartphone based and whatever. It's fine. I mean, Microsoft serves a much more diverse user base, but they're also more traditional. And they do have these traditional phone systems. And this kind of integration is really important for that customer base. And so, you know, Microsoft is kind of the king of the hybrid solution. And this is just a product of their history. Yeah. So it makes sense that they would have to have these capabilities. And that's an advantage for them, for established companies.
And they did, by the way, finally this week start rolling out guest access for Teams. Which, you know, a lot of people who are on Skype for Business, when they heard about the Teams thing, they were like, wait a minute, like, they don't even have guest access yet. How are we going to even use this? And then next day, hey, here's guest access starting to roll out for Teams. So, you know, the first step is just you can add people who have access to Azure Active Directory as a guest. And then in the next few weeks, you'll start being able to add people through a Microsoft account. So
we're going to forget wasn't here. You know, 6 months it's just not going to matter. It's going to all work.
It'll be quick. Yeah. Right now, Microsoft said as of this week, 125,000 organizations are using Teams. So that's pretty good. You know, given the product only launched a few months back. It's got some steam behind Teams. Steam behind Teams.
It's a product.
Woo!
I'm thinking Microsoft Teams Field Guide, Mary Jo. What do you think?
I think you would be really good to write something like that.
Let's see.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just looking at, Stride, which is the new HipChat. We're going to start using it. HipChat's a sponsor, and Atlassian's a sponsor. It has video and voice calling free built in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about PSTN. Is that that's the PBX, right? Or
yep.
Yeah. That's
fashion. I wonder.
Plain old telephone.
POTS, I understand, is they support, but PSTN, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you have it. And it's a progressive web app.
Yeah. Okay. So just happened. Right. So Microsoft today is having an online event called the Microsoft Edge Web Summit. And one of the things they just announced while Windows Weekly was happening is Teams will be coming to the Windows Store soon, thanks to Microsoft Edge, because they're going to have a progressive web app version.
Wow.
A progressive web app. How would you even describe this? I guess a progressive web app version of Teams will come to the store and be in the store.
So what does that look like? Is it a plug-in for Edge or?
No, what it probably is very similar to the web apps that they have packaged in the store now. Those are, I can't remember what they're called, but it's just a kind of a legacy web app. But a progressive web app, they've been talking about this for a while. They're going to have these things in the store. It basically will just look like an app. And that's what's cool about it. So, you know, today you can pin apps to taskbar Windows 10 from Chrome. You can pin shortcuts from Edge, but they're not web apps. They're just shortcuts, and they just launch in the normal browser window. These things should be the browser engine running inside of an empty window, so it looks like a native app, and it integrates with the operating system like it does on Android or iOS, provides notifications and live tile support and whatever you want to add to it. It's up to the developer. But for all intents and purposes, offline capabilities, obviously, it looks and works is basically an app. It's just
and
an
the
app.
Progressive just, part is it what it loads parts of it as needed, or
the progressive app refers to the way it will provide different features based on the platform it's running on. So if you run it on a phone, it's going to adapt to the small screen and it will provide whatever capabilities there. If you're running on Windows, potentially it could be much more full featured because you have more screen real estate, obviously, but you also have more processing power and just more capabilities in general.
Huh.
And you know what's funny? So Microsoft has been saying they were going to do progressive web apps for a couple of years, right?
Then
they just never really said much more. They're like, yeah, we're going to do that too, just like Google, right?
I spend more time on this. It's kind of interesting. Google has their big developer show every year, obviously, Google I.O. They had several sessions about progressive web apps. These guys were all over it. Android supports progressive web apps today in a way that's very sophisticated. Windows will eventually through Edge. So if you go back to Build, Microsoft had one session about progressive web apps. They actually did a really good job of describing it, by the way. But Google just had a developer event in Eastern Europe, in Poland, I think it was. And they had several sessions there about progressive web apps. And so Google, it makes sense, you know, given their nature, and you know they're all web-based and so forth. But they're doing an amazing job of evangelizing this and really pushing it hard on developers and providing a lot of information. Microsoft's been a little quieter, but you know, we've talked in the past about store apps and how terrible they generally are and how kind of hybrid store apps, like not pure UWP apps, seem like they're the future. I actually think that progressive web apps will be a bigger deal than UWP apps.
Me too.
Centennial apps are a part of that transition I was talking about earlier. But I think the future of apps on Windows are actually progressive web apps. I think this is the way apps are going to be.
And they showed a slide that MS Power User has in their post. They said, we're going to crawl and index progressive web apps. We're going to convert them to AppX. And then they're going to automatically be searchable and browsable in the store. So that's going to up their store count a lot, right, if they can do this.
Yeah. Oh, it's genius. Actually, it's going to help everything.
Will they run on the 10S? Random,
what's that?
10S?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, of course. If you search my site for Twitter Lite, that's a progressive web app. That's actually the Twitter that I use on my Windows desktop. It's also the Twitter app I use on Android, by the way. And so it's really just running in Chrome. But it looks like an app. It provides native app capabilities. It can do notifications and all that kind of stuff. I am using it literally right now. Like, it's fantastic. I use this. The only place it doesn't work effectively is on iOS. That's because of the way they use it. Because they can't help themselves. But Twitter Lite is fantastic. And you can see it on any browser. It's just, I think it's just mobile.twitter.com. But I have it saved as an app in Chrome. And that's how I run it. You can see it looks like, you know, there's no browser Chrome going on there. You can't tell that's a web browser window. It's just Twitter. It works great.
I've been using Tweetin, which is based on TweetDeck. I wonder if it's a PWA as well, because it looks just like it's like an application TweetDeck.
The other thing, by the way, that's kind of neat about these kind of apps, I see this. I use Google Inbox as well in Windows, and I do it the same way as this app. Every once in a while, not very often, but every once in a while, I get a little notification down in the corner, and it says, there's a new version of Inbox available. Just click here to refresh. And you're not reinstalling anything. You're not downloading an update. The app is up in the cloud. So it's just goes, and it's all new. They could completely replace it with something else. It wouldn't be painful for you in the slightest.
Isn't that interesting? I like that.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Tweetin is Electron. 20
years ago. Oh, it's Electron. Well, that's similar, because that means it's got Chrome. It's built on Chrome, basically.
Yeah.
Same idea. I mean,
So the question though on the Microsoft end is how they're going to do this. I mean, we know they're going to be in the store and so forth, but I keep waiting for this thing where, you know, they announced that you could pin apps to the taskbar. I thought, oh, but here we go. And that's not it. It's not it. Those things, all it does is launch the web browser, or the Edge web browser. And so we know it's not coming with the Fall Creators Update. So now we kind of look forward to the next version. I don't know if they have any developer stuff happening over the winter or whatever, but I'm really curious to see what form this takes on Windows, because you can already see through the Chrome browser how great it is. You can see on Android how great it is. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Android plus Chrome OS, I guess. I haven't really looked at it on Chromebook, but I know it's going to work exactly the same way. It's really neat. And I could picture almost everything being a progressive web app, frankly. Mm-hmm. Everything that I need.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, maybe it'll be in the spring update. The first update of 2018, because it's something they've got to add to Edge, right? A capability that they would have to add to
Edge.
And
that means, right, exactly, a new browser version, a new OS version.
And the browser is tied to the OS release. I don't think they are going to ever make the browser a store app, right?
No, they've kind of gone back and forth on that. It doesn't seem like it.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, there you go. How about some Microsoft Office news, and we'll get to the back of the book. A centennial version of OneNote.
Yeah, so if you are one of the lucky people who can get Office 2016 through the store, right, which you can as a Surface laptop owner, one of the things you will have noticed is that they don't give you – actually, they do give you a new version of OneNote, but it's OneNote for Windows 10. It's not the 2016 version. It's not the desktop app in centennial form. And this was confusing to everybody, and it kind of made people think, well, maybe they're going to get rid of that thing, that maybe the OneNote UWP client is the future. And maybe it is, by the way, but we had some folks from Microsoft help us out on Twitter. I don't remember, late last week or early this week, I don't remember. It turns out if you can get access to Office 2016 in the store, then you can also get Office to the centennial version of OneNote, meaning OneNote 2016. So I've tried this on a few different computers. I was surprised to see this worked. It worked for me in Windows 10S. I just brought a new I'm using a new computer here, so I actually went to go do this because I thought, well, a new computer, I'll grab everything from the store. And it's kind of cute what it does. I don't know if they fixed something or they changed it, but when you click to install it, it actually loads office365.com and goes to the page where you download stuff from your account. And so it's just, in other words, what it's saying is, sorry, but today you have to go get this the normal way. But the real point here is this thing actually has been put in a container and it will be available to everyone eventually through the store. So it's happening. And we didn't, as of just a few days ago, we didn't think that was the case.
Cool.
Yeah. In fact, since Paul did a little rant before about no one believed me when I said, I know. Microsoft, wait till you hear this. Microsoft told me in February, Microsoft does not plan to do a centennial version of OneNote. Like they
actually
said,
see the difference here is I do believe you because
you've been there.
Yeah, that sounds exactly right. There's a reason we didn't think this was happening.
Yeah. So I'm like, wait, oh, so you did do one, even though you said that. And they also said there was not going to be a centennial version of Sway, which I don't think there is still. I think it's only the UWP version.
So I don't think there is. In other words, there's no desktop version of Sway. So if you're on a Windows 10 PC, you'd use the web version. Or you could use the UWP version. So it makes sense that they would keep it that way, right? I don't see them packaging the web version or whatever.
No, same.
And finally, some add-in apps come to Outlook for Android.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. You know, Outlook for Android and iOS, right, is a great app. Missing some key features. You remember they didn't have contact editing until fairly recently, which is really kind of screwy. It's weird to me that those apps are both being updated at different paces. And so I think it was back in February they added app add-in capabilities to Outlook for Android, meaning that you could it already had add-ins of different kinds. You could add calendars and add support for cloud storage services and so forth. These add-ins were things that would be specifically for the inbox, meaning for the email component of the application. And so you could integrate with them, you know, get an email, send it to Evernote or something, or trigger a travel search or whatever it might be, only in iOS for some reason. Yeah. So as of this past week, they added this functionality to Outlook for Android. I don't know why it took so long, but it's there now. So those two things are kind of the same. Just as we started the show, I saw an item that Office Insiders in this case, are able to test a new search experience in Outlook on iOS. This is something Microsoft announced, I think, in August. So as they every month they do with like, here's the stuff that's happening to Office. This was a coming soon kind of thing. There's a new search experience coming across the various Outlook clients. It's debuting in iOS, but for Office Insider. So if you're on the Office Insider program, you have an iPhone, you can apparently access that now. I haven't seen it yet, but I'll go check that out after the show.
Well, I can't believe it, but you have worked your way through all of these voluminous notes.
You know what? I didn't put any of the Xbox stuff in, so let me screw up the whole thing and mention something.
Oh, man.
About it.
No. I was just about to say, where's our...
Let's revoke editing from OneNote.
I went to an Xbox showcase yesterday in New York, and I can't really talk about some of the stuff I saw. I think in the 19th and the 20th of this month, I'll be able to write more about that. But I just wanted to mention it because I didn't go to E3, didn't go to GamesCon. This was my first chance to get my hands on Xbox One X and see what that was like, and also to play some new games, but also some games I've already played and see how they've been enhanced for the Xbox One X. And I got to tell you, this thing is it's awesome. And I also got to play Cuphead, which I think...
What? Mary Jo's favorite game.
We're going to get Mary Jo on Xbox. It is awesome.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it hard to do, though? I saw so many people saying it was hard.
It's a platformer, but it's I actually think someone else said this when I was standing there, and he's right. He said, you know, this is going to have such cross-market excitement. Like, you know, kids are going to love it. Parents are going to love it. Parents are going to love playing it with kids. Parents are going to keep playing it after the kids go to bed. Like, it's amazing. And you can have – I don't know if any of these show it. Yeah, like this one. You can see there are actually two guys. Go back one screen. I'm sorry. The guy at the top is one character, and the guy at the bottom right, the blue one, is another one. That's two people playing together at the same time.
Oh, fun. I can't wait.
And, it's neat.
So it's got cooperative. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really cool. That. And it really just so faithfully evokes the, you know, Warner Brother type cartoons from, like, I don't know, probably the 1930s or whatever this was. But it's neat. You know, the early, or the Mickey Mouse stuff, you know, where he's kind of Steamboat Willie, yeah, and he kind of hops up and down as he's standing still a little bit. It's got such a neat look to it.
Oh, I'm excited. $19.99, too. It's not expensive.
Oh, so it literally says inspired by the cartoons of the 30s.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. It's got the music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And really well done. It's really, really well done.
Speaking of well done, listen to that purring.
Speaking of well done.
Nice job. Mary Jo Foley's Sriracha has
Speaking
made
Speaking of personal space.
Sriracha, the giant hopper. Wow, that's awesome.
He got excited when Cuphead came on. He came Yay. Right up.
Nice. Wait, come on, Mommy. We want to play Cuphead.
That's what you
should
have named the cat was Cuphead.
Cuphead. Oh, I'm going to get another cat just so I can name him Cuphead.
Yeah. That's Come a here, great Cuphead. Name.
So we're getting our Xbox One X, whatever it is, Xbox 10. Mm-hmm. What is it?
In this case, it's
what
X.
What do you call it?
Oh, man. The Xbox.
I wonder why I keep wanting to call that thing X.
It's coming November.
I called
it
OS X for years, and everybody's like, it's OS 10.
I was really surprised that Apple went back to that, because it never worked well.
There's a great audiobook about Google and Apple, and I can't think of the name of it. But and the narrative is great, but he says OS X, which, you know, whatever.
Oh,
but
that drives me crazy when I hear
when
that.
He says iOS, he says iOS. And it's like,
man.
Like, seriously, like, you know, 10 seconds of research is all we're looking for here.
Well, you're supposed to have a producer who is, you know, main job when you read
I don't know how that got through. He must have sent in 50% of it, and they were like, do we tell him?
Yeah. I'm listening to a wonderful, wonderful book called Sapiens, and the guy, who's a wonderful British reader, keeps saying cuneiform instead of cuneiform. And there's a whole chapter on, you know, that's the early writing from Babylon, and there's a whole chapter where he says cuneiform over and over. Now, maybe somebody in the chat room could tell me, is that some British pronunciation I'm not familiar with?
That could be.
Maybe it is, because he's very British, but I was always taught cuneiform.
Well, if he's saying it the British way, then I think we can safely say he's saying it wrong.
There's an extra syllable in there, I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
He did that with a couple of other. Oh, Steely. He pronounced, you know, a Steely is a monument. He pronounced style. And I thought, no, it's a Steely. But maybe it's a regionalism, and I'm just not.
I told you one of my earliest kind of mispronunciations. I read The Sword of Shannara in the sixth grade. It's a 726 page paperback. It's a ripoff of The Lord of the Rings. It's you know, it's a good book for whatever. My teacher allowed me to take two report periods to write the report. It filled two of those little blue notebooks. It was one of my earliest reviews, if you will. And then I talked to her about it afterwards. And the first thing she did as we were talking, she pronounced the name of the main character, which is Shay, which in my head I had been pronouncing as Shea the whole time.
Oh, boy.
And I didn't hear anything she said for 5 minutes because in my head I was like, what is she talking about? It just completely... You know, it took me weeks to read this thing, and I had mispronounced this guy's name in my head the entire time.
I remember seeing, before J.K. Rowling was too famous to go on book tours, it was only the second Harry Potter book. And my daughter was young, and we had read the first two together, and I took her to see and meet and get an autograph from J.K. Rowling. And she said the funniest thing in her talk beforehand. She said, it is pronounced Hermione. Many people come to me and say, Hermy one.
That is
wow. Not how it's pronounced. It's Hermy Hermione. I think we all now know, thanks to Harry Potter, it's Hermione. But there were some poor people out there who probably are turning bright red. It happens with Game of Thrones, right? You read Game of Thrones. How do you pronounce Cersei? Exactly. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, I thought they were calling it Casterly Rock, like a castle.
Yeah.
And then I see it spelled, it's Casterly.
It's like Casterly.
Casterly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think this is just something we have to get used to. Hermy one. Oh, Hermy one.
And as it turns out, Centennial is actually pronounced Centennial.
Centennial.
But who knew?
Centennial.
Yep.
Yes. Well, anyway, I still think it's cuneiform, but... I'm looking at the dictionary. I don't see any
alternative British mispronounced aluminium. I'll ask Johnny Ive. I'll see how he says it.
I got into an argument with a woman at a British bread and breakfast who I ordered eggs over easy. And she said, you know, here we call them whatever she said. And I said, nobody cares what you call them here. you knew what I meant. And I have never heard that word before.
You know what I mean? Just give them to me.
I just want the eggs.
I have never heard that term before in my life, but you knew exactly what I meant. Why are you telling me how to say it? You know? We got along great.
All right, now somebody's passing along the Cambridge Dictionary pronunciation of the word cuneiform. How to pronounce cuneiform in British English?
Cuneiform.
He is saying.
There you go.
There it is.
All right.
Yep. Cuneiform.
In English, we say
cuneiform.
No, that's wrong too.
Cuneiform.
You know what? Who the hell knows this English dictionary is...
Cuneiform.
That's wrong all round.
That's funny.
Oh, Cambridge Dictionary, you lie.
That is amazing.
It's C-U-N-E-I-F-O-R-M.
Hermione.
All right, our show today... Now I feel wrong. See, that's what I don't like about it. I don't want to feel like my education was a waste of time. I'm having that Paul Thurrott moment, you know, where I sit for 10 minutes.
Nobody wants that.
What? My life is falling around my ears. Cuneiform. Cuneiform. Our show today brought to you by Bleu Apron. Bleu Apron is the name of a very good place. When you go to the French cooking school, Cordon Bleu, right? They make the apprentices wear little blue aprons to let everybody know they're not chefs, they're apprentices, and that's I think where the name for blue apron came from. You're all apprentice chefs now, but you're learning how to make amazing meals. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. You get a box. We get a box every week, but you get to choose. By the way, you don't get a box if you don't want. It's not a subscription. You go to blueapron.com/windows, and you can take a look at what's on the menu. Pick three meals. They have plans for couples or families of four. Although I have to say, we get the couple plan, but we feed a family of three easily. Less than $10 a meal. What's neat is they are very aggressively fresh produce. I've never seen such beautiful produce in my life. The meats are fresh and the fish are fresh, too. It's a refrigerated box. But you only get exactly what you need. So if you need a couple of teaspoons of soy sauce, they give you this little bottle of soy sauce. It's awesome. You also get a card that describes how to make it. And it is phenomenal. You go from the ingredients for a ramen bowl, including Tokyo-style ramen noodles made from scratch for Blue Apron. Premium chicken raised with no antibiotics. All the produce is sustainably raised to an incredible meal. And once you do it, you feel like, I can do this. It's not intended to be a cooking class, but you really do. Let's see what's on the menu here. Summer vegetable and egg paninis with Calabrian chili mayonnaise and caprese salad. Okay, it's kind of the end of summer. I'm sorry if I'm making you hungry. We're doing this tonight. Soy-glazed pork and rice cakes with bok choy and marinated green beans. Skillet, they have vegetarian stuff, so skillet vegetable chili with cornmeal and cheddar drop biscuits. See, once you make cheddar drop biscuits once, you will make them for the rest of your life because you'll go, this is awesome. This is amazing. How did I live this long without knowing about cheddar drop biscuits? Blue Apron has partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. So you're getting the most amazing, beautiful food. Be sure to check out the Blue Apron Market on their website, too, because they sell pantry items, you know, to help you cook. We got beautiful knife, chef's knife there. Visit blueapron.com/windows, and this is the nice deal. Your first three meals are free with your first purchase and free shipping. So, you know, it's basically like half off. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Don't wait. By the way, a great way to get kids introduced to cooking, and they are going to love it. The house smells fragrant. I always try to get recipes with fresh ginger in it because it just
It smells so good. And then you have an amazing meal. Blue Apron. Are you hungry? I'm sorry. I feel bad. We have some people in the studio who are dying now. BlueApron.com/windows. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the back of the book. And look who we found back here, Mr. Paul Thurrott with his tip of the week. It's Cuphead. Hey, Cuphead.
Someday, Cuphead will be a pick.
When are we getting the? When are we getting that?
As soon as
November 5th or something, right?
Cuphead? No, because Cuphead's coming in September.
Oh, but crap! I'll be in France.
It's coming soon.
Oh man, can we call off our trip? Cuphead's coming.
Well, hold on. It's an Xbox Play Anywhere title. You'll be able to play it on Windows, so you can play it from your trip.
Oh, I am bringing my Lenovo Yoga 2 second generation Yoga with me. Carbon, love it. All right.
I am actually reviewing that right now. That
isn't it nice?
You will agree, is the nicest screen I've ever seen on a laptop.
You got
in
the
my
OLED.
Life.
You got the OLED.
Yeah. Yeah. Phenomenal. I showed it to Mary Jo yesterday.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. It's astonishing.
The only thing's a little creaky when you bend it, partly because it's pulling the keys
actually.
Back.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the strangest thing
I've
ever
seen.
It should
be nice and smooth. But that's the only negative I can find. And I love this laptop. It's my travel laptop because I do photography. I want that OLED screen. I'm never going to look at it. I mean, that's. Everything
pops. It's crazy.
Oh, I love it. A little pricey, but that's all right.
It is, yes. Well worth it. It's break the bank expensive. Okay, so anyway, tip of the week. I've been warning people for a long time not to trust Microsoft with content. Here's a great example of why. A couple of years ago, Disney opened up their movie service to basically every service there is. I think they were on iOS earlier than that, but you can basically share your accounts and access content you buy anywhere else if it's Disney content. So, for example, if you bought a Star Wars movie on the Microsoft service, you could log into your iTunes account and access it there. You could log into your, I don't remember where the various places, but all of, the Google account, et cetera, et cetera. They just booted Microsoft out of this. It's not clear why, although I did point out in my article about this that it was exactly 2 years after the announcement was first made, which makes me believe it was contractual. Some people have speculated that this has something to do with Disney moving to their own service, but that's not happening until I think it was 2019 or something. It's a long ways away. And why you would boot out Microsoft first is unclear, but I picture it more like there's no one actually working on this thing at Microsoft and no one answered an email or something, and it just got lost by the wayside. But I find this kind of thing to be disturbing. So if you've already synced Disney content to your Microsoft account, I guess it will be available in the Microsoft Movies and TVs app going forward. But if you buy new Disney content from anywhere, it will no longer appear in Microsoft. Hopefully that gets fixed. But as of today, it's not. You should just know that that's the case. For the app pick of the week, I actually have a bunch of stuff. I should pause this. I don't know why it's running. This just happened. I just noticed this while we were doing the show. The classic Sega game Space Harrier 2 is now available on Android, and it's hard for me not to play this game right now because it's so awesome. But this is one of those games where it kind of scrolls off into the distance. I guess you could call it a first person game, or like it's third person technically, but whatever. It was kind of a big deal at the time. That's not in the notes, but I'm just throwing it out there. SwiftKey was updated for support for several additional languages, and now they support over 200 languages on Android, which is incredible. Oddly enough, on iOS, they support about 7. I don't know why it's so different, but SwiftKey on Android, incredible language support. We already mentioned the Outlook on Android thing, but Outlook on Android was finally updated with the app add-ins, as we discussed earlier. Then for you Microsoft guys in the audience, one of my favorite Chrome add-ins, Grammarly, has been made available on Microsoft Edge. This is an add-in that every single person who uses the web needs. It checks your spelling and grammar. You don't have to be a writer. I mean, it's great if you're posting to like WordPress or something. It will, highlight your mistakes there. But anyone who comments on websites or fills out forums or whatever, this will check your spelling. It's important. So maybe you've got a customer service query, whatever it is, you want to make sure you're not writing something goofy. Maybe you are sending an email through Gmail or whatever. It will check your spelling and your grammar in the email. This is super important. It's free. There is a premium version. I don't think you need it. I've been using the free version for a long time. And you can use it if you use Microsoft Edge now. So that's great. And then finally, I actually originally had this as my tip, but we talked about it earlier. Just a reminder that if you can access Office 2016 from the Windows Store, you can also install OneNote 2016 as well. We're talking about how Mary Jo was told they were not doing this. I mean, it's really funny how you have to find this. Like, you can't find it in the store. What you have to do is find the special store link that's in a Microsoft support document in exactly one place. and click on it, and the store launches, and there it is. Wow. There's no other way to find it.
Wow.
Is it because they want you to use UWP? Is that why they're hiding it?
I've never asked why. I don't ask why with these kind of things anymore. It's just so ludicrous. I have no. I'm sure there's a reason. I don't know. But it works. Wild. It works great.
So follow Paul's link or Mary Jo's link, and you'll get the.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to install it right now.
The truth is out there, Leo.
Do you use Grammarly?
Every day. I love it.
Yeah, Lisa adores it too.
Yep.
But I feel like it's pronouncing it cuneiform. I just feel like it's a cheat. It's a cheat. I didn't spend $100,000 to go to Yale to
I don't know why
use Grammarly.
Yeah.
Ask them, would you cuneiform or cuneiform?
Well, it would only help me with the spelling.
Yeah, no. No, right. Lisa swears by it. It's really good. I prefer not to know how I'm grammatical.
Literally, if you use the web, you need to have this thing. You have to have it.
Yeah.
I've never tried it. I mean, maybe I should try it.
Yeah, you really should. It's great.
Enterprise pick of the week, Mary Jo.
So we talked about how there's been a lot of Teams news this week. Well, there's even more Teams news. Microsoft and Adobe announced a partnership in 2016 where they said a lot of Adobe's cloud products would be moving over to be hosted on Azure, and they would make Azure their, quote, preferred cloud. Which doesn't mean exclusive. It just means preferred.
Yep.
Now they're taking a further step. And this week they said that Adobe Sign, you know, the e-signature service that Adobe has, is going to be Microsoft's preferred e-signature service in Office 365 and Dynamics 365. They also said Teams is now Adobe's preferred collaboration solution for Adobe Creative Cloud, Document Cloud, and Experience Cloud. So the two companies are taking some of their core assets, and they're not like doing an exclusive integration, but they're making the integration very easily available to customers because they say there are a lot of overlapping customers who use both Adobe and Microsoft products. So it makes sense to have these things offered up to you directly if you're already using something like Teams. Say you have Teams and you want to have a bot that does e-signature for you. It'll just pop right up. How handy. These things are coming within the next few weeks, starting to roll out. But this is basically the next step in the Adobe-Microsoft partnership from a year ago.
I'd prefer if you just faxed me your signature. Trust that.
Oh, you go to my bank.
Oh, the more we closer we get to e-signing, the better. I think that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, I am now using my very first Grammarly. I have impeccable grammar. I'm using my first progressive web app, OneNote.
What is it?
Very nice.
OneNote. I just downloaded it from your link.
Yeah, it's not a progressive web app. It's
Centennial, right? Centennial.
It's a Centennial app. Sorry.
Oh, I thought it was. Well, forget it. Then I'm just
close enough. Close enough.
No, but this is the Office version for
10S. Yeah. Oh, so you're able to get it because you have Windows 10S.
Yes, I was. It was very nice. Yeah.
Yep.
And now I'm signing in. All right, moving on to the enterprise tip of the week from Mary Jo.
Great. I don't usually do tips of the week, but I realize I have not talked about this blog before, and this is something a lot of other people might find interesting. There is a blog on TechNet called the Microsoft Australia OEM blog, technet.microsoft.com/AUSOEM team. It's the Australia OEM team. The reason this blog is so useful is they don't just do links that are interesting to OEMs, but they do links that are interesting to everyone. And right now, they're doing a whole series of posts about Ignite ahead of Microsoft's Ignite show, where they are grouping things by product and telling you sessions you might want to check out if you care about a certain topic. So yes, you can comb through Microsoft's Ignite site and use filters and try to figure this out yourself, but this is so much better and easier the way they're compiling lists. So they've got, here are all the Windows Server 2016 storage focus sessions, if you care about that. Here's all the Microsoft 365 sessions. Here's all the Hyper-V sessions. You can just go click on their links and find this information so easily, way, way more easily than you can on the Ignite site. But this isn't the only time they've had interesting links for me. I've picked up a lot of really good Windows client, Windows server, and other kinds of links from these guys. They do a great job on this block. It's, again, technet.microsoft.com/AUSOEM team. The Microsoft Australia OEM team gets a shout out.
And I guess you were saying this, Paul, but when I go to my Office 365 home preview on 10S, it does have OneNote in there as well as everything else.
The store, if you downloaded it from the store, you would have gotten a new version of the UWP version, not the desktop version. Yeah.
So that's different than...
Yeah, see how it doesn't say 2016 next to it?
Oh.
That's why we thought that.
Great. And that's why this is so confusing.
But it says installed, so I'm really confused now.
Well, it's installed. I mean, the truth is, if you have Windows 10, you already have the app anyway.
This is the UWP version.
Yeah.
But I did install, on your recommendation, some other version, because this is the
Centennial. Don't bring me into this. That's not my fault.
Yes, it is.
I blame you.
No, yes. I mean, the point is, I don't know why they don't include it with the rest of Office, because when you get Office through Office 365, normally you do get it.
Right.
So I don't quite
think they're going to.
Yeah.
I bet they will.
Maybe they'll change it. Yeah. Who knows?
Hey, I don't know about you, but I'm ready for a nice, cold, tall beer. Except this one won't be cold.
No, it will be cold. It just won't be like ice cold.
Okay. But
yeah. You know what? It's fall. Time to start talking up some dark beers. One of my favorites always has been, still is, Founders Porter. You know, there are a lot of porters out there that add a lot of unusual ingredients. You see coconut porters, coffee porters, sometimes even curry porters. I've had one. If you just want a plain old delicious porter that tastes chocolatey, caramely, just the perfect balance, I would recommend Founders Porter. Only 6.5%. You can have more than one.
Oh, it's Jeff Sessionable.
It's pretty sessionable. Yes, so that's the beer pick. And then just a quick reminder, since we mentioned Ignite, we are doing a meetup at Microsoft Ignite. It's going to be Tuesday, September 26th at World of Beer on Dr. Phillips Boulevard. I guess there's more than one, so you have to know which one.
That's great.
It's a big world.
No RSVP needed.
It's not the town of beer. It's the world of beer.
6 p.m. We will be there. Paul will not be drinking beer, but I will. And he'll be drinking.
Still not drinking beer, Paul. Wow. Yeah. I'm impressed.
I know. He went to Rattle yesterday and didn't drink beer.
What?
I find ways to drink. I'm fine.
What do you drink instead?
I usually just drink wine, but.
Okay. So no carbs in wine, huh?
No, there's carbs. It's just less carbs. I'm not.
You're not a purist. Not
like a
slave to your.
A monk or anything.
No.
And we'll do Windows Weekly live at the show too on Wednesday at our usual time, 2 to 4 Eastern.
Alas, I will not be back until that Friday.
You won't, right?
No. So no. I think Father Robert will be your pilot for this show. I think. I don't know. Maybe Jason, maybe Megan. One of our regulars will be hosting both Windows Weeklies for the next 2 weeks. Okay. And I'll be back in October.
Now, what do you do? I heard you say France, but what are you?
I don't know what I'm doing. We're going on a river boat on the Saône and Rhône rivers.
Oh, yeah.
So you're going to end up in Lyon?
We are. We're going Arles to Lyon. Mm-hmm. I've never been to Provence. I'm really excited. Start in Monte Carlo. We go to Nice. Then we get on the boat in Arles. Then we go to Lyon. Then we take the TGV, Très Grande Vitesse, to Paris and spend a couple of days in Paris. And then we come
home. This is a beautiful time of year to be there.
I can't wait. Mm-hmm. I can't wait. And good wine. We're going to Châteauneuf du Pape.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Oh, it's going to be good.
Well, have a good time. I'll look forward to your photos.
The photos. Yeah. Yes. Thank you so much, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Two of the best, if not the best. Brad Sam's notwithstanding.
No, including Brad, I would say we are two of the best.
You can find them, at allaboutmicrosoft.com and therot.com, respectively. Allaboutmicrosoft.com is Mary Jo Foley's ZDNet blog. Therot.com is Paul's home on the web. You'll also find his books at leanpub.com, including The Field Guide to Windows 10. and the soon to come field guide to Remix stories.
And teams.
Chapter one.
Not an app.
What's the app?
It's just a feature. We do Windows Weekly every Wednesday, come rain or come shine, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. If you want to stop by and join us live, we'd love that. If you do, please join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. That's a website, so you can do it through the web client or in your IRC client. If you want to join us in studio, as these two lovely honeymooners did, Brad and Hannah from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
I heard there was a third honeymooner, Leo. Where is that person?
There's only two. Oh, well, okay. So they're, so Hannah's mom, Brad's mother-in-law, and father-in-law apparently accompanied them on parts of the honeymoon.
Oh, okay.
Well, they're only 12. They had to get permission.
Pennsylvania, eh?
No, they're adorable, and I don't understand what they're doing here for their honeymoon, but I'm glad. But I hear that they were on their way to Lagunitas, and they got sidetracked.
Nice.
So they're on their way
now.
You're
just like across the street, though, aren't you?
We are right next door to Lagunitas, yeah.
So we have not been out there since this happened.
You must come out and have a beer or two. Well, you, Paul, we'll get you some wine.
I'll smell the hops.
Smell the hops. The sriracha.
Smell them. Mm.
So if you do want to be honeymooners in our studio, you just have to email tickets at twit.tv, and we'll get a special room for you. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. And we will see you. I won't see you for a few weeks, but Paul and Mary Jo will be back next week for Windows Weekly. Take care.